the savannah sucked sounds away from him. The slashing of the grass on his dungaree trousers, his laboured panting, the grunts each time he fell, all of them soaked away into the hot, still air as though it fed on them, hungry for the slightest noise. The last 200 yards were the worst. He topped a small rise, and the homestead was revealed to him. Only the skeleton remained upright, sturdy black timbers swathed by shooting flames. The slats and roof planks had already burnt through, peeling off like putrid skin to lie in crumbling strips around the base. The animals had scattered. Panicked by the heat and roaring flames, they had butted their way through the stockade fence. They had run for 100 meters or so until their immediate fear slackened, then wandered about aimlessly. He could see the horse and a couple of pigs over by the pool, drinking unconcernedly. Others were dotted about among the grass. There was no other movement, no people. He gaped numbly. Where were Frank and Lauren and Paula? And the Ivet work team? They should all be trying to put out the fire. With legs like weights of dead meat and breath burning in his lungs, he ran the last length in a daze. A bright golden rain of sparks swirled high into the sky. The homestead's frame gave one harrowed creak and buckled in on itself with a series of jerks. Gerald let out a single wretched wail as the last timbers crashed down. He slowed to a halt 15 meters from the wreckage. "Lauren? Paula? Frank? Where are you?" The cry was snatched up with the sparks. Nobody answered. He was too frightened to go over to the remnants of the homestead. Then he heard Orlando whine softly. He walked up to the dog. It was Paula, darling Paula, the little girl who would sit on his lap in their apartment back in the Arcology and try to pull his nose, giggling wildly, who grew up into a lovely young woman possessed of a quiet, dignified strength, who had bloomed out here in this venturesome land. Paula, eyes staring blindly at the swarm of sparks, a 2-centimeter hole in the center of her forehead, cauterized by the hunting laser. Gerald Skibbo looked down at his daughter, knuckles jammed into his gaping mouth. His legs gave way, and he slowly folded up onto the trampled grass beside her. That was how Paul Manani found him when he rode up 40 minutes later. The supervisor took in the scene with a single glance. All the anger and hatred that had been building up during the day crystallized into a lethal, zen-like calmness. He inspected the smouldering ruin of the homestead. There were 3 scorched bodies inside, which puzzled him for a while, until he realized the second male was probably Lawrence Dillon. Quinn would want to move swiftly, of course, and Lawrence's feet had been in poor shape, even back when he killed Vorix. Christ, but Quinn was a cold bastard. The question was, where would he go? There were just 6 Ivets left now. Pole had arrived at the Nichols homestead, where the 2nd Ivet work team was busy assembling a barn. His Mazer carbine had picked them off one at a time under the horrified eyes of the Nichols family. He had explained why afterwards. But they had still looked at him as though he was some kind of monster. He didn't much care. The rest of the villagers would put them right tomorrow. Pole stared at the band of jungle 1 kilometer away. Quinn was in there, that much was obvious, but finding him was going to be difficult. Unless Quinn might just head back to the village. He was a true bandit now, he'd need food and weapons, enough supplies to get well clear of Schuster County. A small roving band could elude the sheriffs and even a marshal, assuming the governor sent one, for a long time out here. Orlando nosed around his legs, and Pole stroked him absently. He missed Vorix more than ever now. Vorix would have tracked Quinn down within an hour. "Right," he said to the Alsatian. "Back to Aberdale it is." It was his duty to warn the villagers what had happened in any case. Quinn would have taken the homestead's weapons. Thank Christ the colonists were only allowed hunting rifles, no heavy caliber stuff. Gerald Skibbo said nothing when Pole covered Paula with a canvas tarpaulin used to keep the pile of hay dry. But he allowed Pole to lead him away and mounted Sango when he was told. The 2 of them rode across, over the savannah, back to the Nichols homestead.